Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic University Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Canton III, and we are continuing our coverage of the Disney Plus series, X-Men 97. Remember It, Episode 5. And I will honestly never forget this episode because, holy shit, a lot of stuff happened here. So let's get the crew introduced so we could talk about it first. The super producer, Jake Christie. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to have this crew on. We got a good group today.
Yes, we certainly do. And firstly, we have a returning OG member. Unbelievable that we see him here. One Black Dragon Roll, that damn Black Dragon Roll, a.k.a. Jerome Cheng, is in the house. Jerome, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm glad to be back. I'm doing well. I just saw it this afternoon or like sometime early afternoon today, but I was like skipping past every tweet that I saw that even remotely referenced it. But I think the first thing I actually remember seeing was AC just like in awe from whatever the episode was. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm getting with this, but I'm really looking forward to it. And it really delivered.
Awesome stuff. And of course, listen, this guy, this is the second time on the show. This guy is a Twitter legend. Yeah, you know him from the tweets.
A Twitter menace is what I would say.
I will say a legend, because I feel like more so than anything else, he's created his own Twitter universe of.
Wait, are we talking menace or legend? Because like that gets you a statue in Genosha, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's fair that they might be putting a statue up of Teej in the Twitter Hall of Fame someday, but that's Teej. Teej is in the house. Welcome
Teej
back.
Teej was
sir.
Right. I'm holding my Teej was right sign.
Thank you for having me back. I'm very excited this time that we get to talk about something that's actually good. Because last time we were talking about Echo and I haven't thought about Echo for 1 second since I left the podcast. So I'm excited.
I haven't seen the series at all yet, so it hasn't even been whispers. Oh, so
you're not missing anything.
This is my review right now. Thank you.
Just watch the fight scenes on YouTube, and that's all you pretty much need. I just watched this episode we're talking about yesterday. I saw a bunch of people reacting on the timeline. I immediately went and muted everything because I was scared of spoilers. but holy shit. I knew that something crazy had to happen for episode 5 of an animated show for people to be reacting like they did, but I still was pretty taken aback when I actually sat down and watched it. Man, what an episode of TV.
Yes, most certainly. And we'll definitely get into that for a second, but I do want to initially, Jerome, I'll start with you. Mm-hmm. You know, coming into this series, obviously full of nostalgia and everything like that. How has it lived up to that aspect for you so far?
It's interesting because I think a lot of us have gone into it thinking, like, how will it live up? And it's really, like, it takes all the pieces that make sense about it, but it's, like, its own thing that is, like, it's evolved, it's learned from MCU. It is not a kids' show. This is not something you would put up at Fox in the morning. I think what I like about it too is they figured out the formula to really amp it up is like a lot more dirty macking, which is like fantastic. But seriously, I think nobody would have called what this was going to be. I think whether you're an MCU fan or an X-Men animated series fan, you weren't going to call what this was. I think maybe like comic book fans like yourself, AC, and others would have like seen it because you're like just pinpointing things and like, okay, they're tackling this story, they're tackling like that part. And I think that's really cool to go in that way. But it's been really interesting in how intricate and detailed it is while still being accessible to those of us who are still kind of general fans too.
Yeah, I think the focus on, you know, translating real world and real life events and making it work on screen in a comic book story is something that's really so impressive about this
show.
Yeah,
like the real world event of like your ex coming back in the picture and then you're not sure what to do with your current man. Like,
I mean,
as relatable as it gets.
That's much a part of it, and I can't wait to get to that aspect of it. But Teej, as you haven't been on as of yet, what have you thought so far as you've been getting back into this series?
I've been kind of blown away by it. I think that they've really nailed the balance between kind of like what Jerome was saying, the balance between like there's enough nostalgia here to where if you really just want to feel like you're watching your old school Saturday morning cartoon when you're watching the original X-Men series, you can really have that. But they're also building something a bit more layered and a bit deeper. I mean, you have a scene in this week's episode that's a really quick scene, but you're literally seeing Magneto have like flashbacks to the Holocaust. Like that is stuff that is very, very subtextual in the original series. That's still subtextual. It's not like we're having the out conversation, but it's much more direct and it's much more centered on where the story's going. And we quite literally see a genocide like in this episode. And the genocide of mutants is obviously something that's always threatened towards the X-Men, and in some places in the original series carried out to a certain extent. You know, mutants are dying, and you know that there are life or death stakes, but this show has found a way to really ramp up that level of intensity while still maintaining the jokey joke nature. We still get to hang out with Mojo. We still get to see the immense amount of dirty macking and kind of feel that push and pull between certain characters who are love interests. We still get to have all that stuff, but we're also building something that is just so cool and different. And it also feels, and I'm not saying this to take a shot at the MCU, but it just feels nice, even though we might be heading there. We have five episodes now where we're not really dealing with the multiverse. Obviously, there's a character that is cloned, so we are getting two of the same character, to speak. But it's nice to just have a grounded story that's linear, that's not dealing with the multiverse. There's some time travel elements, which are perfectly fine. But I could not be more impressed. And I agree. How could you have known what this is going to be in terms of what we've been getting from the MCU lately? There's no way you could have known. And you could tell that they obviously realize the stakes of how important the X-Men are to their future, but also how important it is. It's not just the future. It's not just, oh my God, now we finally got our X-Men versus Avengers moment. We're building towards that, but it's important that you get the steps along the way, right? And to start with an animated show and to really nail it like this, obviously there's a certain segment of the MCU fandom that is not watching the show because they haven't really been watching any of the shows, let alone the animated ones, but you're really doing yourself a disservice by not watching this because it's just amazing storytelling. I could not be more impressed with what they've been able to accomplish through five episodes.
You know what it kind of feels like, Tej? Especially with a lot of maybe the gripes that people have with the current live action product, it reminds me of when people would complain about live action DC, but then you'd be like, but have you seen the animated?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. I feel like more so than anything else, and I thought you guys laid it out really well, there's just a level of connectivity, all of these stories coalescing, and the fact that you get to care about these characters, which when the stakes happen, they mean a lot more, and these relationships all interwoven, and character choices that sometimes make sense and sometimes are irrational, but humans are irrational too. We're all irrational in our own way. So finding that and seeing how that has kind of just ramped up, and you to both your points, the intensity has just really ratcheted up to this fever pitch, especially in this episode. Like, emotions are on 900. So to start off, Jake, I want to get your thoughts on this aspect of the episode first, because we'll get to the Gambit, Rogue, Magneto of it all soon. A member of our Discord, Paul Bull, noted a couple of weeks ago that when the situation with Madeline occurred, that, yeah, I think there was going to be some issues with Jean and Cyclops not too long after that, because, hey, man, you just had a baby with my clone. And that wasn't going to go well. So in this episode,
what happens on the astral plane stays. If we're being real right here, like, it's not even like Earth or anything. Like, it's not a reality. Mm. I just don't know why you can be held to a standard on that front. But Jake, please.
Yeah, so I remember I made the joke, I think, after episode 2, where I said Cyclops is going to be in the doghouse when he says to Jean, but Madeline did that. That doesn't exactly happen, but there is, like, I am sympathetic to the way that Cyclops is feeling. I am not sympathetic to the fact that he verbalizes it and expects it not to backfire. Mm. Like, I think that it is understandable that someone, because as we discussed, Madeline is like, there is an argument, depending on what metaphysical beliefs you have, that Madeline is indistinguishable from Jean Grey, because she is biologically exactly the same, and she has memories. And what is a person's personality but the sum of their memories? That's the thing I personally believe.
It's not even a variant. It's not like a multiverse variant.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I'm sympathetic to Scott, because that's generally my belief, is that we are nothing but just our memories, really. But I still wouldn't say to my girlfriend, so I'm still hung up on you, but like not you. And yeah, and I think him using the baby is a cop out. I think like it's not like he misses her. And yeah, I think I feel bad for him in some ways, but also just, man, you just sometimes you just gotta you just gotta shut up. You know,
I'm actually curious. I want to ask you because like early episodes, I think a lot of people were like just so psyched that we finally got like Cyclops, that guy, like the leader of the X-Men doing his thing. And what I really, really love about this episode is we also got Cyclops, that fucking scrub, like that man who is going to cheat on his woman with the same woman or a different mutant. It doesn't matter. It's just who's available at the time. I am not 100% familiar with it in detail, but I know Cyclops is out in these streets.
Well, I mean, listen, whether it's Madeline, whether it's Emma Frost, like, Cyclops be getting down, man. He be getting down. And then I think on top of that, it does feel like he has lived such a sheltered existence. So when you when you do live in and have such a sheltered existence growing up, what tends to happen is you tend to act out in different ways, maybe not in the ways society would necessarily suspect, as for the most part, Scott Summers is leader of the X-Men. Scott Summers seems like a very diplomatic person for the most part. But in terms of relationships, especially after this situation occurred, we see this different side of him where he's stealing time in Madeline's mental. Which is like, and then Jean comes in like the Kool-Aid man. And I was just like, oh my God.
Oh my
Honestly,
God.
I just had the thought. You want to talk about a sneaky Link? The
real. Actually, literally. Yeah. You just realize like Cyclops, like in name and practice, like leads with a single vision all the time. And, you know, sometimes you just got to follow your optic blast. I get it.
that blast.
Yeah. Did y'all notice that when they have the psychic moment where Jean kind of breaks in and she realizes that he's using that to talk to Madeline Pryor, that Emma Frost is sitting at the table and she also notices? Does that count as like a foursome? Like in that moment where you were with three women in the astral plane, I think that definitely counts as Cyclops was definitely having interactions with three different women at one time.
How do you not get other properties on the astral plane? Like, how do you do it in the same house, like, all the whole time? You at least bring them to a different spot. No?
Real estate's expensive on the astral plane, though, because the NIMBYs are shutting down new development, so it's hard to get a new place.
They shouldn't be on the family plan. It's not working.
it's tough time. It's tough times for Scott and Jean. Teej, what did you think about this whole situation? Because this not only translates to them, but then on Jean's side, all of a sudden she gets a little loose with it. And old Logan, who's been like yearning and thirsting after her forever from the old animated series to this one, he says a couple nice words and she's ready to go for it. So what do you think of how this situation played out?
Like we said, the Dirty Mac levels are extremely high here in the X-Men house. And I thought Logan, to give him some credit, played it so well of like when she realized like, oh shit, like I just kissed you, I'm cheating. He was just like, it happens. You forgot the rules for 2 seconds. Who cares? I thought that was a very, very great way to play it. But it seemed like a natural point from where everything's going on, and she doesn't know who her memories, whether they're hers or Madeline Pryor's, and you know, we're just gonna lay one on Logan. I just thought it ratcheted up the messiness in the house by 10%, and I really, really loved that. And I mean, Jean needs some love too. I mean, there's Madeline Pryor's been getting a lot of love, and Jean was not getting any love at that time, so she's got some, you know, she's got some stuff to make up for. And we could get to a point where everybody could be happy here. We just have to have a bit more open communication, and maybe that's what we're heading towards. There are some X-Men comics where there are, you know, couples that are more non-traditional. So we might be going in that direction, because the Dirty Mackin game is extremely high. I will say I would not want to have, if I am dating a woman or trying to date a woman, I wouldn't want to have Logan as the guy on the other side of my woman. I wouldn't want to.
See, I feel like I feel like if this was X-Men 2024, it would just be like, oh, we would cut to a like article in the New York Magazine of this polyamorous couple is making it work in Westchester County.
That's great.
It's only one and a half if it's like your clone, though. Like, it's not even like thruple at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly. Try True.
That's a good point.
Start dating an identical twin and see how that argument goes.
I know Mojo has to be mad he didn't come up with that show idea. His ratings wouldn't have been so bad if he just had a polyamorous mutant couple. That would have
Love Island on Genosha?
Yo, real Love Island, real sex. Let's take it back.
Real sex.
Listen,
that's bloody. Wow, Ooh. That's like that's an SNL sketch they didn't make, but X-Men real sex, there's some meat on that bone.
Oh my gosh, and yeah, so like to TJ's point, as far as Logan is concerned, I think that was actually a really good moment for him, in just the idea of like, of course, him holding back his own urges, but also, you know, relaying to Jean like, hey, Scott is the one that you love. You guys will figure it out. Just take the time to figure it out and have a conversation. And I think what further kind of exemplifies where Scott is where that reporter lady comes over to do that interview to try and to show him and the X-Men as a front-facing group and to put a good face on these particular mutants who are being shown as these heroes and things along those lines. But as the questioning gets a little tougher, Scott kind of breaks. And I thought that was a very, I thought that was a very interesting and honestly revealing side of, you have to be this person who is perfect. And it's not just Scott the person, it's Scott the mutant. And this idea that you always have to have this type of way that I can't be shown as being too omnipotent with my powers. I can't lose my edge. I can't, you know, attitude-wise, all of those things. And it just equates to so many things we see along racial lines, that when you see him talking about his frustration, and more so than anything, that bitterness that comes out with him on at the tail end of what he's saying really kind of stuck out to me. And it kind of shows that even somebody as diplomatic and as really kind of like the baby face, as a wrestling term, for Scott.
He's the Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, he is the Cody. Yeah, he literally is the Cody Rhodes. To see him kind of break that way was really telling. And it kind of showed and exemplified everything that was happening in the episode later, as we saw that play out on screen. So, I mean, Jerome, as I have you here right now, what did you think of that scene? Because I found that to be very fascinating.
It's really interesting because, like, I think we kind of reach a breaking point here, but he's been worn down since the series started. Like, he was the leader of the X-Men. He got his, like, heroic entrance. We got reintroduced to him. Like, I think most of us fans were, or all of us fans were like, oh my God, we got Cyclops and he's in. By the end of the episode, he doesn't even lead the team anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's already happening. A failed mission where Storm loses her powers, which kind of happens because he chooses to go to the birth of his son, who gets kidnapped by Mr. Sinister and has a virus and he has to send him away.
Yeah.
While finding out at the same time that like the person that he's been with the whole time isn't even really his wife.
That's a lot.
Like, that's a lot. Even if he was like, you spoke to all those parts about him needing to be this exemplary, like, unshakable figure, but it's not even like he, like, this guy's been put through the ringer. So I think to that end, it's like, even the best of them, like, it makes perfect sense. And I think what you probably, like, would know when you know about Cyclops from the comics, he's nowhere near the best of them anyway. Like, right. I think your point about him being raised as like kind of a sheltered boy scout, like groomed essentially to be the leader of the team, like actually resulted in him not being an experienced person, someone who's not worldly, someone who can't handle things. Like, arguably you want like in terms of that level of like worldly experience, you want someone like a Wolverine, but he's loose cannon. And that's also why like it hurts like the X-Men as a whole to not have a Storm in the mix that has her powers to actually like lead them along. Because even if like Cyclops is available, I don't think we argue that he's the best option. We would all choose Storm. So I think to all those ends, it's like it's very much, you know, someone who is told that they're going to be this thing, is given the specific life that they thought they were going to have, and all of it is ripped from under them. So like, it like where we arrive at in here, and even like starting off in the interview, like you have the camera person who's complaining about the glare of the light on his glasses, like it's just picking at him.
Yeah.
So like where we arrive here, you kind of get why he escapes to the one thing that he knows to be true in Madeline Pryor. It's still wrong. It's hella wrong, but you understand to a certain degree. And yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you know, they really gave him such a deep, and like, this is like coming from me personally as someone who has like watched the cinematic version of a Cyclops and being kind of very disappointed in like him never really getting his due. Yeah. And he's getting like a real arc here. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool too.
Yeah. I mean, when you think of something familiar, comfort, things along those lines, he will look to Madeline for that in this instance, especially with, you know, you have Jean there. And I mean, the leader point that you mentioned with Magneto coming in at the end of the first episode really puts things into an interesting...
He thought he was chosen by Charles and he wasn't.
Right, and he wasn't. So like, obviously, basically your stepdad, who you really love and you've really been focused on doing everything for throughout your life, said that, hey, I don't think you're good enough for this. I'm going to choose this person.
He's Isaiah Thomas. He thought he met all the criteria to be on the Stream team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's a fair point to make. Teach, like, you know, to the point with the interview and such, it's almost like when I talk about the idea of Scott trying to be a certain way, you can kind of equate that to code switching in certain instances. And you have to be a certain way around these people to make them feel comfortable as opposed to being comfortable in your own skin. What did you think?
He started talking like it was just me and you. Like, he started talking like, first of all, I want to commend the show again, because I have largely never found Cyclops interesting through all the movies and through even the original TV show. He's just not my cup of tea. He's just not why I watch the X-Men. And then through five episodes, I think they've made him extremely interesting and very cool. Also, I'm going to say something controversial, but given how the episode started, this man cut a promo on humanity on live TV. This man said, y'all only are here. Your existence is literally dictated on the fact that I am here as your protector. That rhetoric right there, I think, is directly responsible for what happens in Genosha. You cannot cut a promo on humanity, even though he is right. He did not tell any lies. We all know, as people who watch wrestling, you all know when you get into that promo and you start talking crazy, there's sometimes you have to pay the iron price for the words that you use and the tone that you use in these promos. Oh, and at that point where Scott Summers was doing that, on the cusp of the UN recognizing mutants and recognizing Genosha, which is going to already have anti-mutant sentiments on 10, they couldn't even give Magneto a trial without humans pulling up and like, nah, fuck this. We shutting all this shit down. So when you say something like that on the cusp of this big UN moment about to happen, you can only expect that violence is going to happen as a result of that. Not saying that the humans were justified in what they did with the Sentinels. And we don't know exactly who set up the attack, but we have a pretty good idea that FOH is probably involved in this attack and probably involved in this kaiju Sentinel that just popped up in Genosha. But he cut a promo on humanity. I understood why he was frustrated. He's got a lot going on, but probably not the best time to go sit down in front of a camera. We probably should have used somebody else to go sit in front of that camera in that moment. And I think, unfortunately,
I thought Beast was doing great.
Yes, I thought Beast would have been way more diplomatic, and he's got a lot less shit going on than Scott Summers does. So it just felt weird to me that he was, and then you're getting pressed, you got caught lying, they're making fun of your glasses or the fact that there's a glare. It just wasn't a good time for Cyclops in that moment. And you know, I'm sure he was thinking right after that, like if he was the best version of himself, he would not have cut that promo, but he did not tell a lie. but there is a price to be paid when you talk about humanity in that way.
You're saying he went Hollywood rock on them?
Yes, he did. He turned heel. He turned heel for just a second. Just a second, he turned heel.
What I love about what you alluded to there, Teach, is as you're talking, I am looking at you and I'm thinking of all of your tweets about CM Punk. And,
oh my God, don't give me
and your anger towards what happened with poor old Drew McIntyre. It's just great stuff there, man.
CM Punk will pay for what he took from us. Mark my words. He will pay for what he took from us.
I love it. It's just so good. It's so good.
Shout out Bisexual Undertaker. Congratulations on your
Oh, man. I love it, man. I love it. Everything is wrestling. But, yeah. Jake, I wanted to get your opinion on this before we translate to the major storyline of this episode. So, as we spin Scott forward, obviously this situation, this big Genosha genocide occurs. It seems like his arc is going to really kind of take front and center, especially with a big tragedy going forward. What are you kind of looking to see from him as this show continues to evolve?
Like, because I think when we talk about him not getting selected to be the leader, you wonder, and I think you assume, that the negative qualities that would make him not the selection are on full display in that interview. You know what I mean? That he does that. That's why he's not capable of being a leader, you know?
Yeah, he can't handle it.
He can't handle that. He can't handle, you know, biting his tongue. He can't handle, you know, he's very easily swayed by his emotions. And I think that he's going to try to overcome it. I don't know if he will, but I think that's what I'm interested in seeing is, like, you know, his inability to understand why he would not be a perfect leader is why he's a bad leader. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think he's going to have to recognize his faults and recognize his shortcomings, because that's what any good leader can do. Any good leader. And I think that his, you know, strong-headedness is actually kind of a detraction in that regard. So, I'm very interested to see in how he, you know, how much blame he takes for what happened in Genosha, how much, does he fly off the handle, or does he get depressed, you know, because you really can see either happening. You can see him, like, you know, beating himself up, or you can see him being like, see, this is exactly what I told you. And I think that whatever he does, that will answer in a great deal whether he will be the leader of the X-Men at some point.
Yeah, it's something to be said that this was the B story for this episode. Yeah. There's a lot of major things going on.
It's planting a seed, though.
Yes, it certainly is. That will definitely, I feel, come to the forefront.
Interesting what Jake is talking about, because, like, as he was talking through it, it just, like, made me think about, like, Cyclops' actual power is, like, illustrative now of, like, what he is going through personally, in that it is all about restraining the thing that he wants to let out all the time. Mm-hmm. Or, like, can uncontrollably let out when it is his optic blast without any glasses or anything protective. So
I like that.
Yeah.
Very well said there. But our main story here, as we finally get the love triangle between Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit playing out as we thought it would. It's been building for the first couple of weeks of this show. And now we see it really play out. It's surprisingly emotional. Like, it really stuck me, especially when we get Rogue finally telling Gambit about how she was allured by Magneto in terms of Magneto assisting her and helping her out with her powers. And he certainly kept on assisting as that situation occurred. That was... that was quite the
lent
scene.
A helping hand.
Well, yes, in more ways than one. Let me.
How
tell
old
you.
Did you read her in that? Because I felt some grooming vibes. How
it
old
is full
is she
grooming
supposed
vibes.
To be?
Yeah, we've discussed this, especially when they show the flashback and it's like she's still with her under her mom's wing. Like, ooh,
yeah,
buddy.
She got handed off. Like, I tried to talk to this
off
with the guy.
Crazy.
Actually, though.
That's how it happens.
I know.
You watched
it.
It was right there in front of us.
No, you're right. That's the crazy part.
I had
this
chat with you guys. Like, yeah. I was texting our old group chat after, like, we find out that they had... I mean, it was the first episode, basically, we find out. Or the second episode, maybe, we find out about that they have a history. And I was firmly team Dirty Magneto. And then you guys talked sense into me of just like, you know, because like I was just so excited about just him like being like fucking about and ruining everything. And you point out like the obvious age difference, but I was trying to talk through it because I was just like, they're mutants. I don't know how aging works. Like looking at the larger MCU, like there are so many instances. I mean, Captain America goes back in time. And listen, at that point, he's like 100 something going back for Peggy Carter. Like, isn't that a situation
Sharon relationship too.
I don't think that we've neglected talking about how Captain America is problematic.
No, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Which is also like makes me so excited because I don't think they would address it, but I think you all saw the teaser for like the next episode. But
I didn't. I always avoid those little teasers.
I saw a screenshot online and I was so upset that I found out that way, but here we are. Anyway, it's grooming. It's very much grooming.
So Rogue's parents are basically like those parents of those kids that just drop their kids off at Michael Jackson's house, like, oh sure, go ahead, you can stay over there. Like that flashback was crazy. I was like, wait, it's right here. Why is she dropping you off with Magneto? This is crazy.
I mean, like, if you frame it that way, like, the montage that happens is very much a Neverland Ranch type. Like, they did Arts and Crafts. They were, if Magneto were Michael, it was just like, is he a magic trick? Something like to that effect. Which is, like, I don't really, like... It's a very serious thing. I just want to be clear about that first and foremost.
But when they show him in like the fucking library, those photos look like on a college brochure, like a one-on-one tutoring. Them looking at a book.
Yeah, like wherever he is, yeah, it's just like it is both like the Harvard campus and like the middle of a jungle, apparently.
Yeah.
At the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. Great parenting, Rogue's mom. Just really great stuff.
It also it becomes so abundantly clear when like she is having doubts and is looking to leave him. Like as he is lying in bed with all his troubles, does it not look like she is like worried about her grandfather?
Wow.
Damn. Just think about that visual of him lying there with all that white hair, and I know she has like a few streaks herself, but like
that's a statement that you just made.
Also, the agreement that when she goes to the X-Men, we must never speak of this again.
That's so nasty.
That's so messed up.
If Feige doesn't tell us exactly what age Rogue was when Magneto realized that his powers allowed him to touch her, I am going to riot. I need to know exactly how old she was and what role she played in this discovery, because they show it as like, you know, like he's passing her something or she's passing him something and they touch by mistake and then like nothing happened. So they're like, that better be the real story, because I like Magneto, but there's something weird about this. I don't like it, Magneto.
Smirking now, a little too much, you know what I'm saying? Like, just like weird. There's way too many smirks. Also, it's like kind of crazy when you think about it, because we get that montage and that's not like the first instance of like weird age discrepancy. Because when Jean kisses Logan, she's kissing like a guy who's like a millennium gnome.
Yeah, that's another
thing. The thing is, and like I think I said on the first episode, I think with age gap discourse, I think that there's if the bottom number is above, you know, a certain number, like it's fine. Like I think if Jean's like 32, she's smart enough to make the choice to kiss a 100-year-old guy.
Anyone from like 40 to like 620.
Like, yeah, she can decide because she's a grown adult. But once again, Rogue is with her mother.
Yeah,
she has a parental guardian.
Insane.
So I mean, we don't even know, because remember, you know, Rogue's mom is Mystique. So
that's the other thing too. Like adding that part to it, like that, like Karen looking lady who handed her off was like not really her. That was Mystique, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, even as we kind of spin it forward, I think was it what's her name, Dr. Cooper, I believe, who was talking to Magneto, and then Magneto dropped that terrorist, that great terrorist line.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's no easy way to transition between Dirty Mac and grooming to, like, real-world politics. But you tried it, I'll give you that.
But I think that, because it looks like the way that Dr. Cooper reacted to, who are you choosing to be along with you as your queen, and the way that she reacted when when he said rogue leads me to believe that that's actually Mystique and that's not
right. That's, not that's been like an ongoing theory that that's been, and like there's like been bits too when she has like a very noticeable fear of these Sentinels.
Yeah.
In a way that like she shouldn't really, were she a human, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think that's fair. They've been kind of alluding to that. So, I mean, that scene that we just talked about with Magneto and Rogue was told to Gambit. And I got to tell you, Remy LeBeau handled that as much of a G as you could ever handle a situation like that.
Yeah, and no, he handles it like very well with a lot of restraint for someone who I equate to essentially Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. It's a very fair comparison. It's a very fair comparison. I think just the idea that when he talks about like our connection goes beyond skin to skin touch, and she doesn't believe that, and he's like, all right, you know,
we can. It was like the nicest, like most beautiful, artful way for her to say like Rogue got to get some. Like, yes. You know what I mean? Like Jay, like you're nodding there, yeah. But like when you heard that, like
if it wasn't PG. The line would be a woman has needs.
A woman has needs, as yes. Rogue does.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the fact that Gambit let that go and was like, all right, we could just be friends, I understand. And then the unfortunate of 5 minutes later, him seeing Magneto and Rogue get at it on the dance floor in the air, my boy was really struggling. It's real tough tease. How'd you feel about Gambit in this situation trying to deal with all this? Because I feel like he handled it as well as anybody possibly could.
First of all, if a woman is telling you, hey, I need some touch, like that's a part of the package for me, I need some touch, don't say something like love is better, is more than skin deep or whatever the hell you said. That was a trash bar. You are better than that. You are better than that, Gambit. I've heard you be better than that. You are way better than that. Second of all, did she really have to do all that on the dance floor? No, like she didn't actually see Gambit because Gambit was out before they start to do the kissing part, right?
Yeah.
But she didn't actually, she's not looking down there.
Was that more ceremonial, though, for the committee? Like, really sell them on Magneto? Like, wasn't that part of the idea?
Well, that's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, but why can't she sing? Why can't we just go up there, dance, touch, like, handhold? She went for the kiss. It's like stabbing my guy in the heart. You know my guy's down there. You literally just told him that this was happening, so he hasn't had any time to process that you're about to be Magneto's queen now for the sake of Genosha. I understand that, but then you got to kiss him right in front of my guy.
She was a woman with needs who finally got the okay. Like, what, she was going to slow play that?
Well, I felt like she was going to slow play it. Like, handhold today, next week, kiss on the cheek, whatever you want to do in private, but like, I'm standing right here. Like,
I don't know. If you're an X-Men, I think you like live by the idea that you might not see the next day, so you got to go for it all.
Well, that actually is probably how they should be thinking about it, given what happens at the end of the episode. I mean, what a horrible last day. I got to see my girl's kissing on this fucking sex predator, and now I'm like, this is my last day on Earth? That's a bad last day.
Let me add, because Gambit is at the table watching this, and Madeline Pryor is kind of talking to him in a way that is almost like she wants to get in on the action.
I felt the same thing.
Madeline, I mean, come on.
Yeah, she's like, wow, if I don't see a big pot of gumbo over here, oh, buddy. hey, Mr. LeBeau, let me see that andouille.
What that beignet do?
Oh God! Yeah, she definitely seems like she was about that action. But a couple things notable about this whole scene beforehand. So the council, we get to see Moira McTaggart, we get to see Banshee, we get to see Sebastian Blood, we get to see Emma Frost. So it's cool that we get to see those characters there. Before this scene even begins with the party, we see our good old pal, the Watcher, outside viewing things, which was kind of like a red herring. Oh, so that's who
it was. It was the Watcher the whole time.
Yeah, absolute bum. Okay. The Watcher is a jobber. What is this guy doing? What? You show up whenever shit's about to go down. You don't do shit. The Watcher is an absolute bum. Come on, bro. Like, what are we doing?
Like... like WrestleMania doesn't happen without a production truck. Someone needs to be back there. Okay? The greatest WrestleMania ever does not happen. If our boy Paul Levesque needs to be back there watching from the skies just to make sure everyone comes in as they should, you know? You don't make it about the game anymore. That time has passed.
That's so good. So yeah, so we get the watchers. It was kind of a red herring. You notice that, oh man, some shit is about to go down. And of course, it does. We get some real Super Sentinel Master Mold like.
I mean, before that, who came down to warn them?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Good old Cable. Time slotting in. Actually, I really like how that looked on screen. That was
pretty cool. That looked really cool. Yeah.
Look cool as you know, he meets with Madeline, and then she realizes that's her son. And so you see Cable, and then he disappears almost like he time slotted to the wrong like place. It's like, oh damn, I came here too early. I was like, damn, it's a struggle for him.
Yeah, too early or too late. Like
what? depending on what the situation was. But yeah. So then we got kind of live this multi-headed sentinel.
That's crazy.
Who has the green laser beam seem to just wipe out everything and everyone. Mm. People are dying. This is getting horrifying. And I'm thinking like, and this is before we get to this last 5 to 8 minute stretch. I'm thinking like, damn. Oh, so they're doing that. They're doing that genocide of Genosha storyline from the books. And we'll see where that part goes. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But seeing that all play out was like, is just very, oh, puts into stark effect. So Magneto is getting into the situation.
Does it happen fighting. The same way that no one sees it coming, like in the books?
Similarly. Yeah. And the fact that they get into this aspect, and of course, Magneto is protecting everybody that he can, and it's all so sudden. And it's also shocking. And then Rogue and Gambit obviously are trying to, they're all trying to
fight. Also, Rogue, who has selected Gambit by this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And Magneto is kind of like, all right, that's right. Because he does.
Rogue has both Gambit and Magneto being Sean Kingston in that she was so beautiful, but they're both going to go kill themselves now.
And she never gets to tell, you know, she didn't tell Gambit that she had rejected Magneto for Gambit, but she never gets to tell Gambit that. So we know, but Gambit doesn't know. And then
where Gambit kind of gets a couple of like nods, because the man was just cool about it. He just got in his motorcycle and be like, let's go, Mushery. And then just like, what a badass.
Yeah, really badass. And really like horrifying scene where Magneto's with the warlocks, I should say. And then of course these sentinels with this power beam, and he's trying to fight it off, and then also he's protecting Rogue and Gambit at the same time, and
he's preventing Rogue from saving him.
Yeah. He's like, nah, don't get involved. Don't get involved. And then I don't think Magneto's dead, because why would you kill off that
nobody, no death.
Nobody, right. No death.
Nobody, no death.
Is Nightcrawler dead? Because he's
he was okay at the end.
No, yeah, they did the poll. They checked his pulse.
Okay, also, he shows up at the end, like once the like actual explosion happens. Like Nightcrawler is one of the people checking in on like them at that point. Perfect. Which, like, I mean, I don't know if it was gonna be safe, but like since you mentioned Nightcrawler, I was so happy to see Nightcrawler show up.
Me too. Oh, I went crazy. I love Nightcrawler.
He was bamfing. He was really bamfing
everywhere.
All that teleporting was wonderful to see. But yeah, and then as Magneto disappears, Rogue is just like, she just blind rage, and that Sentinel is like, all right, we got more people to kill. And good old Gambit charges up the motorcycle, blows Rogue out of the way. And then he goes in there with his trusty staff, and that Sentinel say, yuck, and just stabbed him. Ooh, that was rough.
He yeeted him.
Oh, my God. Yeet. It's just, I felt so bad for Gambit, man.
But at the same time, like, obviously, like, I don't think it's Gambit a heroic would go moment. That way. But, like,
what an
incredible moment for Gambit to do that. And, like, know that he actually has the upper hand because he has full contact with the Sentinel at that point. Yeah. Like, incredible moment.
Yeah, that was so well animated. That looked so fucking cool, but what a heartbreak.
All the action set pieces in the series period have been incredible. Like, it's gotten to this point where, like, it's set such a high bar that I don't know how live action X-Men can pull off, like, how elaborate these things are. And, like, how, like, I think just because it's animated, it allows you to be kind of suspended in that, like, reality, like, already. But we don't need to go into that part of it. But, like,
incredibly. No, but I think that that's relevant, though, because I think that, I think that a lot of, while there are a lot of writing things that are making this very successful, but I do think a lot of the things that, I see a lot of people being like, why don't they just do exactly this in live action? And I'm like,
they can't.
You both, because you can't do the action, and also, a reality is, and this is where I'm going to, I'm not going to say it, but in college, I did learn that one of the big things about animation is that subconsciously audiences will accept much less explanation for things in animation.
Yes.
Like, you just can't move as fast. You just can't. Yeah. Like, the amount of information that they get across in, like, 2 seconds is just, you can't do that in live action. But I think what I think they can learn from it is, even if the effects can't look as cool, I think what they do so successfully is that it's not occasionally there's a dynamic bit in a fight. It's like, at all times, the powers are working in tandem. And I think that that's something that the Avengers movies kind of squandered, is it felt like a lot of times they were just having, like, individual bits where Iron Man's fighting people here, Captain America's fighting people here. And, like, once or twice a movie, they'd have them combined. But it's like, no, it's cool when everyone's in tandem. And yes, that means you need to get everyone on set doing previs all at the same time. Sorry.
Sure.
But, like, that is, I think, something that they really should take a page out of, where it's like, have all these characters fighting all in the same frame.
Yes. Yeah, especially with a team like the X-Men. I feel like that's a necessary thing that definitely needs to be done. I think that aspect is going to be interesting to watch as they go forward. But, like, to keep it here, in terms of this show, the I can't feel you line, Wanda vibes.
Yeah.
The way they cut that to black as she's still crying was, wow. And I just think the overall magnitude of what took place was like, holy shit,
Of the team watching it from home.
Yeah, right? Rest of the team, right.
And, like, exactly. The news report saying, like, you're about to see some disturbing images.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think all of that, I mean, it puts into perspective a lot of the stuff that we've seen in real life over the past few months. It really did. Like, for me, that was the first thing I thought of.
Oh, yeah.
And it's scary along those lines. And Bo DiMaio posted a long thing regarding this episode. And he said that this episode was essentially his pitch to write this series. And I thought that was interesting. And he made some equations to, you know, what was life like after 9/11 and when he came out to his parents and how he was viewed after that. It was just it's interesting, and it puts into full plain view his idea for what this is about and what this is and how you can put a modern effect on what this animated series was back then and really push it forward to what real life is like for a lot of marginalized people out there now. And it just felt so. Like, I sat there for 5 minutes after I watched that and was just kind of in awe of the storytelling level, but also sad in how real it was. Because it really felt, that's where I felt it more so than anything else, and how real and how terrible a lot of the things that happen in this world are, and how, in a lot of times, even as a mutant with powers, you're not powerful enough to stop something like that. So much death, so much tragedy, so much destruction, all of those things. And we're talking about mutants, people who are trying to be comfortable in their own skin, just trying to live, just trying to breathe, just trying to find a way to be, that just trying to be comfortable, be themselves, all of those
mentioned
things.
It, AC, like, as Magneto, like, before the big explosion, we don't know what the actual consequence of it is. Like, Magneto turns to one of the mutants and says in German, like, it'll be all right before everything. Like, he is, and he's having the flashbacks. He's, like, reliving the Holocaust in that moment while that's, like, going on.
Yeah. So I said this yesterday, and I feel even more so now that definitively this was one of the best comic book TV of anything, not just animation episodes that I've ever seen, just because of the layers of depth with the characters, having all of those emotional moments play out on screen. You have this love triangle and you have another love triangle on another side. You have all of these characters trying to figure things out. And then you have this incredible tragedy that takes place at the end of the episode, which, as you alluded to earlier, both Jerome and Tej, that, you know, Rogue never gets to tell Gambit how she feels. And yeah, that moment is lost. And that's tough. Where do you go from here if you're the X-Men? Because Bo DiMaio called this episode my warm-up. 8 to 10 is where things get crazy. So right, if this is the warm-up, what's 8 to 10 going to look like? So
I kind of see how he would call that. Sorry?
He compared the event that we saw to 9/11. Oh,
yeah. Saying, right.
First 5 episodes are like our nostalgia. What was life like before 9/11? And then never to return. You know, our lives changed forever after 9/11. And we kind of can't get that back. There's a new reality. And I thought that was a very interesting way to frame what they were trying to create. And the fact that it happens right in the middle of the season means that we are about to, it's going to be insane for the next 5 episodes. It's just going to be crazy.
I mean, with that, if that's what he's pointing to, it'll be interesting if they tackle the various types of reactions you can have toward a type of event like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I think what, and like, I think that goes to some of what like Jake was talking about, like for people like Cyclops, how does a Cyclops react to something like that?
Mm-hmm.
How does he take like this horrific thing and maybe start creating a bit of a self-righteousness that might turn him into an even worse example of like what a reaction to this could be.
Yeah.
I think it'll be really interesting on that front. And I think that's also a thing that he's actually been laying low quite a bit. But I mean, like, if this is where we're setting at, like, it's going to be interesting where exactly Logan is sticking in all this and how he's going to step in.
They've done a really good job, I feel, so far of just sprinkling in Wolverine, as Wolverine has been kind of front and center of everything X-Men related over the past 20 to 25 years. True. Yeah. So in this show so far, they've used him, I feel, sparingly, but they have made what they've used of him count and made it efficient in whether it's lines or scenes or anything, all of his interactions, whether it's Gene, Morph, or with the team in general. I feel like it's worked very well. But the idea that they focused on individual focuses on Storm and Cyclops and Gene and even Jubilee in the last episode, like all
it's setting the table for sure.
Yes, it's setting the table for him to come in a major way over the last 5 and have a bit more of an impact. So listen, it's kind of scary to me in a lot of ways how I don't really have any complaints about this show, because usually there'll be something where you'd be like, I can do without that. But no, I feel like I've watched this first 5 and it's, I think
there's an effect of like it surprising you.
Yes, it is.
So I think like I do think this will age well anyway. Like I think it's a really good series as is. But you know, I think when we probably were all entering it, we were probably grading it on some curve of like we'd start feeling good about seeing kind of like our old cartoons back.
Yeah.
No one was expecting layered stories, layered characters, real world event, like allusions, like things like that. So I think because that's happening and done in a way that seems, you know, much more nuanced than, say, like a Falcon and Winter Soldier, for example.
Yeah.
Right. I think we're all caught a bit by surprise. So if anything, coming off like an episode like this, and we're like, I think we're still trying to catch up to it. Like,
yeah,
where they came in with the show and where we expected to be, like, just like we're finally starting to like arrive to be at the same wavelength that like we're able to receive what they're actually giving us.
Yes, I think that's a great statement that you just made, because and once this episode happened, the real like thoughts come into my mind that, okay, so we're watching greatness right now. We're watching them operate at the peak of what storytelling could be in a comic book medium. And immediately the thought goes to appreciating that in the moment and looking forward to, and it's not a binge. You wait next week and you see what happens, and the story continues to build.
But do you mean to tell me that this show is going to be relevant for 9 consecutive weeks and have buzz going for 9 weeks? That seems like it's much less preferable to only having buzz for 3 days when everyone watches it. You don't make any sense, AC.
Let me tell you, man. It is, in retrospect, as we've seen the streaming age evolve and devolve in some ways, just me seeing today that Showtime is folding up shop.
Technically speaking, that's actually not going to change anything. They're just adding everything to Paramount Plus.
That's not an
example of that, but sure. I understand what your point is.
Yeah. It's just the larger point is, I mean, as you said, Jake, the streaming age is not exactly gone according to plan.
Also, Jake, you're talking to two gentlemen here who have seen the culmination of what? A 4-5 year bloodline storyline? Like, right. Let it draw out. Let it come to fruition.
That's true. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, AC's been really saying weird. Everything is wrestling forever, and he's right.
Yes, I do acknowledge.
Could not be more right. Everything is literally wrestling.
It really is. And so TJ, I want to get some closing thoughts from you on not just this, just kind of like the gravity of this episode, the aftermath, and everything that you're feeling as this season is halfway through. We still got 5 more to go. We still have to. Storm situation with Forge and the adversary. That's something that has to play out. And obviously this big overarching storyline that will play out going forward.
Remember that time that Forge was like, hey, by the way, I worked with the government to build that machine that took your powers away. And also, by the way, I love you. And also, I love you even without your powers. Like, all in the same literal interaction. I thought that was a very
You can never
strategy.
Say that Gambit took an L with Forge in this season, too.
I'm extremely excited. You know, I was thinking when we saw that the big twist in the first episode was like Magneto is going to be the leader of the X-Men. I'm like, oh, how are we going to get Magneto back into Magneto mode? How are we going to get Magneto back to where he is like, fuck all humans, it's wartime, and we bring our Charles back in, because we all know he's not dead. So we bring our Charles back in to assume the Charles role. They've done a great job of that. An event like this is exactly the kind of thing that would push Magneto to where he's been before, and maybe even further than where he's been before. So I think that setup is perfect. Mm-hmm. The Storm thing is going to pay off so many dividends when she gets her powers back, assuming she gets them back. I assume that she will. I just think that on a different couple of different storylines that like I said, they made Cyclops cool. I'm not ignoring the Cyclops storyline because it's cool. They've got so many ongoing storylines. We also have a budding young romance between Jubilee and the new guy. Like, we have so many cool storylines that are being formulated. They've done so much to put the base level in, and now these 5 episodes, we just get to see them all play out. I could not be more excited. I could not be more happy with the show, and especially given where the MCU's been. And I'm not a MCU hater. I have not been bashing the MCU. I've been honest about MCU projects that don't work for me, but I don't bash the MCU. And just seeing that this is the first, I know that we've had quote unquote the X-Men in live action. We've had Professor X, for example, we've had variants and stuff like that.
Right.
Kamala Khan is a mutant, blah, blah, blah. But seeing how we're starting the X-Men off, I could not be more excited. We obviously have Wolverine, which I'm sure that it probably played out like this, like not on purpose, but Wolverine is so decentered in this particular show. But we're also about to get Wolverine on the big screen in Deadpool 3. I just think everything is coalescing to the point where the MCU will have some upward momentum again. And I'm just very excited about that. I'm very excited for Deadpool. That trailer looks fucking amazing. I'm obviously very excited to finish this show. And I just like where things stand with the MCU right now as we go forward. Obviously, there's a bit of uncertainty about the live action piece when it comes to the Jonathan Majors thing. But we've really found a way to take people's attention off that, at least temporarily, because we're really cooking with X-Men. We are really cooking, and thank God that this exists, and thank God that the MCU is positioning itself to throw some more haymakers out there, and I just can't wait to see where all this is going, and I'm very excited to see what they have cooking for the rest of X-Men 97.
I love everything you just said, because it was something that we referred to on an episode that's coming out next week, is where the idea of making the MCU something to get excited about again, as you start to slow down the projects and kind of really take your time in putting things together and not releasing thing after thing after thing after thing. And it feels like, at least with this instance, with a show like this, even as it's animated, it definitely, the positive vibes from this show have definitely been felt. People are watching the show. And I think, and people are enjoying the show. So as you kind of build up to what we're getting with Deadpool and Wolverine and everything that's been talked about, even as we speak, CinemaCon, Marvel is presenting and talking about a lot of the projects that they have coming up. And it seems like they've kind of changed a little bit of, not to be so FBI New England Patriots about it all. And if you have something that you want to put out and you really believe in it, have your actors promoted. Have the people that are superstars be superstars and let them show the people and the fans that, hey, this is something that you should be excited about instead of going cloak and dagger on everything because you're worried about spoiler culture. There's nothing you can do about that. It is what it is. And just something as simple as Florence Pugh eating macaroni and cheese, talking about Thunderbolts is all you can ask for from your stars as you're trying to promote things. But yes, in terms of X-Men 97, this is a great show. I'm looking forward to it continuing. Jake, I wanted to throw it to you. Do you have any final thoughts on anything going forward or this episode in general, your perspective on it?
The thing I'm interested in seeing is because, Bodeman made the 9/11 comparison explicitly, but it's also not an easy comparison to make, especially given like what you said with the time that this takes place. And I think that I'm really interested in seeing the ways that I trust the show to explore accurately the way that I think we like to think in fiction that tragedy molds angels. And in reality, it doesn't, unfortunately. When people get harmed, they don't act in ways that are good always. In fact, oftentimes it makes them act horribly. And I'm really interested in seeing the ways that that's explored. Because like I said, particularly with 9/11, we did most of the bad shit that's happened in America in my lifetime was done in the name of 9/11. So I think that while, I trust them, and I would not have said this before watching the show, but I trust them to have the nuance of it is really horrible that these things happen to the mutants. But also, you can imagine Magneto doing stuff where you're like, okay, this is horrible. This is feels like this too far. And I trust them to have the moral grayness to be like, you know what? Magneto feels bad. He feels terrible. He does deserve some type of revenge, but we're not going to give him the carte blanche. He doesn't necessarily get carte blanche. And that is a complicated thing that I think oftentimes, I think oftentimes fiction, makes angels out of tragedy, but it's no, for every superhero has the worst thing happen to them. And that's how they get their powers and they use them for good. Yeah. And it's in real life, if bad things, if some people get stepped on by life a lot of times they become horrible people. You know, it's kind of a unfortunate reality of living. And so I'm excited to see how they explore that.
Yeah, and I think to everybody's point in regards to Magneto, we saw how he talked to those folks in episode 2. And I see that Jerome hit the, I have something to say.
I just want to add after. No, keep going. You're good.
Yeah, but the episode 2 moment is essential when Storm loses her powers to the Executioner and Magneto is imploring the leaders to be like, hey, don't make me feel like I gotta be somebody who my friend said, don't be this way. Be different. Do something different. We can make this a different way. Now you have this event happening. What happens next is, and how we build off that and what will occur with this quote unquote leader and his team probably coming into conflict over that. That's going to be fascinating to see.
So to the point about Magneto and how he reacts to it, I think it would be really interesting, actually, if he doesn't act in retribution to all this. I think also because Magneto has experienced and dealt with the trauma of his own, he was in the Holocaust, right? Yeah. It's driven so much of how he's operated this entire time up into roughly this point where he inherits the X-Men and his goal is to achieve Charles's dream. I really like the idea that especially for where we've laid out these characters in these episodes so far, that it is not Magneto who is seeking retribution, but Cyclops.
That would be honestly even more interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think, if anything, we have been led to believe when we enter this series that Cyclops is the de facto, like, heir apparent to Charles's X-Men and to lead this team in the way that he thinks is righteous and proper, and in a way that he believes, like, Charles's way about it makes sense. I think Magneto came in wanting to achieve this dream, but has done so far with, like, a certain level of pragmatism that, like, Xavier has never had.
Yeah.
And I think to that end, what we're seeing is the evolution of what can be the, like, achievement of Charles's dream through, like, Magneto's, like, better sense of how to approach it because he has existed on both sides. Whereas you have a character in Cyclops who has lived idealistically, who is now facing this tragedy, who I feel has, like, it'd be so interesting to see him be the one who becomes the enemy that he has judged at the beginning of this series.
It's the
Mordo Doctor Strange double turn that occurs at the end of the first Doctor Strange movie, where Mordo's this, we're all about the Ancient One and everything that happens there, and Strange is like, what is this nonsense? And then it completely flips at the end. I also, you know, lastly for me, how does the rest of the world react to this?
For sure.
Are there not just the people in the government high ups and things along those lines? It's Marvel. So there could be other heroes out there who are not mutants who see this happening. How do they react to that? That's, you know, seeing how that they have 5 episodes to kind of play around with that and see what those characters come into. I mean, I remember Avengers versus X-Men and just some of the conversations that occurred before that fight really got started. And I remember
specifically... Is this like as in an animated movie?
Oh, no, this is the comics.
Oh, the comics itself.
And this is specifically where one of the Avengers comes up to Cyclops and tries to go the whole moral superiority thing. Mm-hmm. Cyclops is like, wait a minute, you don't care about my people.
Right.
You just show up grandstanding here and all this other stuff as far as when these situations happen and you just try and lord over us with your moral superiority. Will this occur again? That is something that I also want to see as we go forward. But
and the Cyclops that we see here, again, like, lost his team.
Mm-hmm.
The first major moment was Storm losing her powers, and I think he does feel to a certain level guilty
mm-hmm.
for not protecting. Like, there is this level that, like, Cyclops' answer maybe to everything that has gone wrong so far is that he's held back.
Yeah, lost his son.
Yeah.
Lost Storm.
Yeah.
Like, lost his job.
Yeah.
To a degree. Like, he's lost a lot already.
There's like a little bit of a, like, a Hawkeye Ronin kind of feel to that mm-hmm. like, I think he'd go in that direction. A bit of a vigilante justice of sorts.
Mm. Oh, I like that comparison. It's going to be great to see. The show has been awesome. It's been excellent to talk about. And it's been excellent to talk about with our guests tonight. We really appreciate you guys for joining us. Firstly, Jerome, thank you for coming back.
I miss you guys. This was great.
It's always like old times when you come on, sir. Where can we follow you and find your work, my friend?
You can follow me at Black Dragon Roll. The work I mostly do now is I work with the No Dunks podcast under The Athletic. So you could see the work that I do for them at No Dunks Inc. on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And definitely find them on YouTube. They go daily live at 10 p.m. Eastern. Give them a look if you don't know who they are already.
Well, I mean, I do have to say that the No Dunks podcast on YouTube not too long ago just hit the 100K subscribers. So congratulations to that hard work.
Thank you.
Hard work paying off. Awesome stuff. And of course, as always, more importantly, it's just good to see you, man.
It's great to see you. This is great.
Yes. And of course, Teej, before I ask you where we can find you, I do have one question in regards to so you made this tweet. I don't have it on me, but it was a few weeks ago in regards to Sam Wilson's Captain America, and you somehow compared yourself to Candace Owens, and I just wanted to find out what's happening there. everything okay?
Wait, I have it up. Can I quote it?
I need to hear this.
This is what it is. Y'all might have to mute me when the new Captain America movie drops. My TL gonna look like a Candace Owens video. Mackie is just a DEI cap. Hashtag not my cap.
Please explain yourself.
Okay, listen. I don't have a lot in common with Candace Owens, or at least I don't read her stuff or watch her stuff. But from what I know of her, I don't think we agree on a lot. But one thing I think we would agree on is that Anthony Mackie fucking stinks. And we used to be a proper country with a white Captain America. If we can have a black Captain America, that's perfectly fine with me. I would love a black Captain America. But not this complete bum Anthony Mackie. This guy stinks. He brings nothing. He couldn't even play Falcon in a way that made Falcon even remotely interesting. Now you just hand him a shield and we're supposed to all of a sudden be like, yes, Anthony Mackie. He stinks. The Captain America TV show where he assumes the mantle as Captain America is only good because they brought in a villainous Cap who was fun to watch. And watching him just take the shield and go up in front of Congress, like, that stuff really worked. But the rest, all the Mackie stuff just doesn't work. Like, if you have to pair him with Bucky, and no disrespect to Bucky, but the reason why you have to pair him with Bucky is because we're not all going to go watch a Anthony Mackie star-led show. Why? He stinks. What a twisted metal. Bro. I loved Twisted Metal as a kid. They cast him. I haven't watched 1 second of that fucking show. And I heard it's good. And I've literally refused. I think Anthony Mackie is a bum. They let this man play Tupac. That was bad. Letting him play Captain America is worse than letting him play Tupac. That's all I'm saying.
Teach, you know what the other problem is about him? He went to Cranbrook. That's a private school.
That's a private school. They let him play rappers. They let him play Tupac. I just don't get it. For 20 years now, Anthony Mackie keeps falling into these roles, and I have no idea how it keeps happening. I feel like I'm going crazy. I feel like nobody is seeing what I am seeing, which is that this guy stinks. If we want to have a black actor play Cap.
Three world. 313. Three world. 313.
I just. Netflix gave him money to let him play a guy who's going to log on to the internet and play video games with his friend who he's having sexual fantasies about. Like, what are we? I don't get it. I just. The Mackie thing just doesn't make sense to me. I've never seen him in a role that I'm like, this guy was made for this role. Who was he? He was definitely not made to play Tupac. Hmm. He was not made to play Captain America. He was not made to play Falcon. Anybody in this chat could have played Falcon as good as Anthony Mackie did. I don't know about that.
This is a podcast that is pro dirty Macking, but anti Anthony Mackie.
There's only one thing I've ever wanted to know about Anthony Mackie, and it's just simply, why does he have that look on his face all the time?
All the time.
And God forbid, Anthony Mackie at this point is on AC's timeline when he's reacting to something.
I just don't understand why he looks like that. If I ever got the chance, and I said this before, if I ever got the chance to interview him, I don't care if the interview ends after the question.
Oh, it'll be the last. You just gotta ask.
Just facial expression to your question would be enough to say everything.
You just go like, "What do you know that we all don't?"
Exactly.
Straight up, just like that. Yeah.
That is that. But I appreciate you, Teach, for being honest and explaining your tweet as
not even is that even that hot of a take? Who's
I'm not saying it's a hot take. I appreciate him.
I don't love Anthony Mackie. I think the DEI cap is where.
We didn't have the terminology then, but isn't that the entire premise of Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is actually that, right? They're all collectively complaining that he is a DEI Captain America. And then he makes a case. And then we finish the season where we're like, I don't know if it was that strong of a case.
Yeah.
That Pepsi speech sure did it, didn't it?
Every 3 months we see a video of Anthony Mackie completely shitting on some kid who's like, oh my God, it's Falcon, it's Captain America. He's like, no, fuck off. We see this every 3 months. Why are we making this guy taking him from Falcon, who nobody gives a shit about, to making him literally Captain America? That means more kids are going to walk up to him. That means he's going to have to shit on more little black kids. Get Anthony Mackie out of here, bro. Get him out of here.
The quote tweets are that for that rather cookie. Someone said Darren Dijon 90 said, "I thought I unfollowed Marcellus Wiley." Someone put a photo of Ben Carson and it said T Junior's review of the movie. What else is there? There's one last one was the thing of John Krasinski in the office with like the board and it's DEI. DEI didn't earn it.
Oh wow.
And with all that being said, Tej, wow, where can we follow you, sir?
You probably don't want to follow me on Twitter from everything you heard on this podcast, and I would totally understand. But if you're crazy enough to do so, I am at @less_humbletej. I also talk about movies on one of my podcasts. It's called the One Take Podcast, and we do movies. We just dropped our Monkey Man episode.
Monkey Man is good real movie.
Goddamn good movie. Cinema.
Yes.
I've seen it twice. I want to see it a third time. But yeah, that's where you can find me. And I apologize for anything I say that offends you in advance. I don't try to be offensive. But, you know, if you like Anthony Mackie, then you might be offended. And that's fine. See, I can take that.
You're not offensive, but what, and I've told this to AC before, sometimes you'll just say, like, I'll just be regular Tuesday, and I'll just see, why are people putting footplay on the TL? And I'm like, I'm not seeing that. Why are you... I didn't know that people were doing that. Who are you following?
There's never a good day of the week to put foot videos or any saying, foot content.
I don't know that that's happening until you say something.
I get that a lot. People's like, wait, I'm not seeing that. And I'm like, I'm seeing it everywhere. They're like, no, I'm not seeing
browser, that. Tej, they have these things called cookies. And based on your browsing behavior and habits, you may be delivered content and potentially advertisements that cater to what they think are your interests.
Yes. If I'm getting the foot algorithm, I'm going to have to delete my internet whole existence and start over.
Fair enough.
I do not want foot content on my algorithm.
Tej, we love you, man. Yes. Appreciate you for joining us. As always, we'll have you on again. Jay Christie, where can we follow you, sir?
You can follow me at the Jay Christie. Listen to my other podcast, Love It First Psych. Me and Andre Barrera are talking about the USA Network original series Psych. We're in season 6. It's very fun.
Excellent stuff. And you can follow me on Twitter at AnthonyCanton_3. Follow the show on all platforms at MC University Pod. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Check that out as well. Patreon.com/MC University Pod, where you can get our bonus content. We just recorded a subscriber mailbag where our supporters ask us a bunch of fun questions, which we always love.
What's the best question so far?
What's
the question?
I mean, the one this week was the questions get more and more problematic because we've kind of
course.
We've, and so like, you know, you remember the clip that happened because this was for March and April, the clip where French actress Julie Delpy said that she sometimes wishes she was African American. They asked me, Jake, do you ever wish you were African American? And that answer is behind the wall.
Yes.
Well, Jake, if there's ever a vacancy in the Captain America your answer may actually help that out.
Yeah, let's see. We'll see.
Yes, we'll certainly see what happens there. So, yes, you could get that. You could get our Mission Impossible series reviews. Ghost Protocol is coming up soon, so we'll get to that. So $3 to get into the Discord, $8 Avengers level member, and, of course, 5-star the podcast. 5-star, 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 baby. So, for Tej and Jerome and Jake, I'm Anthony Canton III. This has been Marvel Cinematic University, and we will talk to you next time.